My name is Angela Ryder. I am the chair of the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy. It is Monday, December 6th, 2021 at 9 a.m. and I am calling this meeting to order. The chair of the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy reserves the right to change the order of the items published on this agenda, except for public hearings set for a specific time. During the board meeting and upon a vote of the majority of a quorum, the board may go into executive session to obtain legal advice from the board's attorney pursuant to Arizona Revised Statute ARS 38-431.03A3 on any items listed on the agenda. All meeting attendees whose presence is not required in the executive session may remain in the board meeting room until while the board withdraws to chambers for an executive session. Any and all legal action by board members will only take place in open session. Let it be known to the fellow board members that the auditor general staff is in attendance today and they have statutory authority to attend executive sessions should we go into executive session. In accordance to the open meeting law, the board has a civility policy that prohibits any type of disorderly conduct that disrupts the board from carrying out its business. Individuals found violating this policy will be asked to modify their behavior and act civilly, and if the disorderly conduct continues, the person may be removed from the meeting. Ms. Cisneros, will you please call roll?
Absolutely. Chair Ryder?
Present.
Vice Chair Moon?
Present.
Ms. DeRoos?
Present.
And Mr. Tapscott?
Present.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We do have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Cisneros. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.01H, the board may make an open call to the meeting during a public meeting, subject to a reasonable time, which is 3 minutes. Place and manner restrictions to allow individuals to address the public body on any issues within the jurisdiction of the public body. However, members of the board are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during the open call to the public, unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. The board, however, may have to review a matter and may ask that the matter be put on a future agenda. Do we have a call to public? If so, you may raise your hand and we will allow you to speak. And it appears that we do not have a call to public.
Madam Chair, it does look like there is one individual with their hand raised.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Please go ahead and unmute yourself.
Hello. So I have something I would like to read. It's 10 minutes long. Is that okay?
We only have 3 minutes in the call.
3 minutes?
Okay. Can you summarize it?
Sure.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. Before you begin, I apologize for interrupting. Can you please state your name or your initials for the record?
My name is Karis DeMars, or KD.
Thank you.
Yes. I am a victim of Tim Williams sexual abuse. I'm a woman in my 40s, and I was diagnosed with breast cancer right before COVID started. All I could think about was I have two young children, and I was finishing nursing school, and all I could think about was what would happen if I would die with my kids and my husband. A friend recommended Tim Williams, the massage therapist, and she said he was a lymph specialist who used to work with cancer patients. I went to him because I didn't know. I just, some self-care sounded like a good idea. I arrived on a Friday. He lit a candle. He told me to get undressed and get under the sheet. He did not ever tell me he was going to touch my breasts. He explained lymphatic massage, which it seemed okay. Eventually he was massaging my breasts. I kept telling myself there's no way that he would be a pervert or something because he's in our community for decades doing this. What I did not know is that Tim is a convicted sex felon. Tim was convicted by a jury of criminal sexual abuse while he was giving a massage, a class 5 felony, in 2002. After he touched the woman's genitals several times, he whispered in her ear, "It's a good thing I didn't use my tongue." Tim lies about his criminal history. He misleads his clients about what he calls body work in order to touch their genitals, breasts, and to insert his fingers in clients' rectums. All of this is public information, nothing new. Yet Tim is still free to practice Pilates and what he calls body work at the same location for over 20 years in Flagstaff. I decided to cancel my last appointment with him because of COVID. I Googled his name. That's all I did. And I found an article about him being arraigned by a grand jury for sexual abuse. Anyway, I guess my time's up. I don't want to talk anymore. I'm limited to 3 minutes, but I'm glad that you're doing stuff. Thanks.
Thank you for sharing that and allowing yourself to be vulnerable.
Yeah, I wish I would have known it was only 3 minutes, but that's okay.
We do have, we've received all of the information on the case, but thank you.
Well, you don't know, but the part that's up, there's more to it.
We do understand. Thank you, though. Are there any other call to public? And there are none, so we will move forward. Declaration of conflicts of interest. The board members should have had an opportunity to review the board packet for today. Are there any conflicts of interest? Let it be known. And there are no conflicts of interest. Next up, discussion and approval of the massage board open meeting minutes from November 22nd, 2021, monthly meeting. Have all of the board members had an opportunity to review the massage board open minutes? And is there any discussion to be had regarding these open minutes? Okay, I move that we accept the massage board open minute meetings from November 22nd, 2021. Let's please do a voice vote with the board members to accept this motion.
Madam Chair, we do need a seconder.
Oh, absolutely.
This is Michael Tapscott. I second that motion.
Thank you.
And can we do a voice vote of all the board members to accept these meeting minutes for November 22nd, 2021? I will begin. I accept these minutes.
Madam Chair, if you'd like, I can quickly just run through a roll call, if that'd be helpful.
Yes, thank you.
The motion on the floor is to approve the board's open session minutes from November 22nd, 2021. Mr. Tapscott?
Yes.
Ms. DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
And Chair Ryder?
Aye.
The motion passes unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, I'd like to ask the board members to discuss the following items on the agenda and consider accepting the following policy changes. So our first policy change, licensed massage therapist continuing education hours may be all taken virtually until further notice, and a total of 3 hours each year can be granted as continuing education hours by registering at and attending a 3-hour board meeting. The board would then grant a total of 6 hours towards biennial licensing for attending 2 board meetings. Board members, can we please discuss this if there is anything that you'd like to add? Any questions on that?
This is Michael Tapscott. I just like to comment that I think they're both great ideas. I think they're reasonable accommodations. In this time, I think attending board meetings has definitely been an enlightening experience for me. I can't imagine it not being for any massage therapist out there. I would encourage that at the minimum. So I think these are both really good things to put into practice.
Thank you for sharing that. And Ms. DeRoost, do you have any comments?
Yeah, this might be kind of technical. I think it's great, too. If the board meeting is less than 3 hours, are we still giving them the full 3 hours?
Director Ogerton, I believe we kind of discussed this a little bit. And so if the meeting is 2 hours, they would still get the 3 hours. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's correct. Any meeting under 3 hours is unprecedented, usually. But we have a short agenda today, but typically the meetings go in excess of 2 hours.
Okay, so that answers your question.
Thank you.
And Ms. Moon, do you have anything to add to this discussion?
No questions, and I'll echo the other board members of being in support.
Thank you. I also agree. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for massage therapists to attend the board meetings and get hours, and I think it gives a lot of education and shows massage therapists what the board is capable of doing, what we're not capable of doing, and overall enlightens the public as well. I would like to move that we accept this policy and
This is Michael Tapscott. I second that motion.
Madam Chair, which policy would that be that you are referencing?
That would be to have a total of 3 hours of each year granted as CE hours by registering, attending a 3-hour board meeting, totaling 6 hours towards biennial licensing.
Okay. So number A, your motion is? Okay. Thank you.
Yes, correct. Okay. So
Mr. Tapscott.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. If you can, Mr. Tapscott, if you can just confirm your second.
Yes, I second the motion of item A.
Thank you.
And can we do a roll call vote once again, Ms. Cisneros, on this item?
Absolutely. Thank you. Mr. Tapscott?
Yes.
Ms. DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
And Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion passes unanimous.
Thank you. The next item to be discussed, we'd like to have the board instruct the staff when reviewing re-licensure applicants prior to automatic licensure to submit for board review when the history includes previous felony convictions, including after statute of limitation has passed. Following receipt of a new inked fingerprint card and updated criminal background check. Currently, what we have is an automatic renewal of licenses, even in the event that someone has a felony conviction on previous applications, but has gone past the 2 years. So what I'd like the board to discuss is that in the event that there is a felony conviction in their original license, that it comes to the board, we review it, we make sure that there are no more felonies or convictions, and that would include a new background check for these individuals before they can have a new license issued to them. Yes, Ms. Moon.
It's Mariah Moon. I am in full support of us going. I feel like it's part of our due diligence to make sure that we're assuring, whether it's the administrative task of making sure that all the paperwork is in place or just assuring that that person is still eligible for license.
Thank you. Mr. Roost or Mr. Tapscott, do you have any comments? Yes, Mr. Tapscott.
Yes, this is Michael Tapscott. I echo those sentiments. I think that's exactly what the board is supposed to be doing, is weighing in on any issues of public safety, and this is a perfect time to check in, and there's a lot of gray area in these situations, and so that's exactly what we should be doing.
Thank you. Mr. Roos, do you have any comments?
No, I support this as well.
Thank you. I also agree that I think that we would be elevating the protection of the public by reviewing these applications, especially if there's been a previous history. And I think that it would eliminate a lot of future work that we might be running into by getting ahead of it. So if we could do, so what I'm proposing is I am motioning that we do update this policy where we are instructing the staff that when reviewing relicensure applicants prior to the automatic relicensure, that it goes before the board. And that also includes a new inked fingerprint card and an updated background check.
It's Mariah Moon. I'll make, I'll second the motion, and I think it's agenda item B, if I'm correct.
That is correct. Thank you. And Mrs. Narrows, could we do a roll call vote on this one as well, on item B?
Absolutely. Mr. Tapscott?
Yes.
Ms. DeRoos?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
And Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion passes unanimous.
We're making progress. Next up, items for board review, discussion, and possible action. Upon a vote of majority of quorum, the board may go into executive session pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A2. To discuss or consider records exempt by law from public inspection, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is specifically required to maintain as confidential by state or federal law. Next on our agenda, we do have a formal hearing, and I would like to defer to the Attorney General's office because I understand there's been additional communication from Mr. Williams regarding his ability to be here today and how, what our options are for proceeding forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe we do have some preliminary matters. I just want to make sure that the independent advisor, Assistant Attorney General Monique Cody, is also on the call right now.
Good morning. I'm your independent advisor from the Attorney General's office, Monique Cody. I met you at an earlier training session. Glad to see everybody again today.
Good morning. It's my understanding, and board staff could probably speak more to this as they receive the email, and then Monique can give you your options. However, it's my understanding that the respondent has COVID, is ill and cannot be here. And so based on that information, he requested a continuation, and the state does not oppose it because his license is currently under summary suspension and he can't practice. But I'll let Monique speak to you about it.
Sure. There is a statute regarding a hearing once a license such as this is suspended. And what that says is that the proceeding shall be promptly instituted and determined. Of course, the statutes don't specify what promptly means, but it's been taken by the Attorney General's office as within 30 days of summary suspension. So I would recommend that if the board opts to continue this to see if it could be scheduled within 30 days of the summary suspension. If not, if the respondent is still ill, certainly a stipulation could be, a written stipulation to identify that because of circumstances, it's going to be continued beyond the 30 days. So basically, your options today would be to continue the hearing. You could go forward with the hearing if you'd like. That is an option.
Okay.
Some respondents don't attend hearings, as you will come to see, but it appears in this situation, the respondent does want to attend the hearing. There was an email, I believe it was last week, with the board's investigator that he would see everyone on the 6th, so he's definitely expressed interest. So when you decide what to do, take into account the background leading up to today. So I think unless you have questions for me, I think that's all I would have to advise you on this item.
And Madam Chair, members of the board, this is Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monahan. Just for information purposes, we do have a meeting in 2 weeks from today in which that hearing could be scheduled.
Thank you. And Ms. Moon, you have your hand up. What would you like to say? I'd like to open that discussion up to the board members to decide what we plan to do.
I'm just curious what documentation we request when someone submits that they are unable to come to the meeting. I know that you mentioned COVID. Was there any follow-up as far as solidifying that he is unable to attend?
As far as I know, I don't believe that there's been any supporting documentation provided proving that he is or is not. My understanding is, and from what I've seen, is that there has been a significant amount of correspondence with the respondent, and I don't believe, and this is purely an opinion, it does not seem like he's not interested in attending the board meeting on his behalf.
Madam Chair, board members, Assistant Attorney General here, I believe Investigator David Elson received the email, and he may be able to speak better to it, but I do believe that he indicated that he did want to participate.
He did. He wanted to participate. Okay. It was over the weekend that he sent the email saying that he had COVID.
Thank you for that confirmation. Ms. DeRoost or Mr. Tapscott, do you have anything that you'd like to add? And again, I would like to discuss what the board, if anybody has a motion as far as what we would like to do to proceed.
Yeah, this is Michael Tapscott. I think it's appropriate because of the severity of public safety and also the severity of taking somebody's license away and affecting their livelihood, that if this gentleman can be here, that we have him here, and since license has been, temporarily suspended, I think there's no reason we can't wait 2 more weeks to address this issue with him present.
Thank you for that. Ms. DeRoost, do you have any comments?
Yeah, I agree. I think that especially that we're within our reasonable time, pushing it back 2 weeks so that he can be present, I think is realistic.
Thank you. I agree. I don't think that, with respect to anyone who has allegations against this suspended licensed massage therapist, it is no disrespect towards them to move this another 2 weeks. We do have all of the documentation, lots of it, and the board has reviewed it. I would like to motion that the board do postpone this until our next meeting, which is November 22nd, 2021.
Madam Chair, I believe that's December 20th, 2021.
I'm sorry, I apologize. Thank you. Yes, December 20th, 2021.
I'll second that motion to move it to December 20th.
And Mrs. Narrows, can we do a roll call vote?
Absolutely. Mr. Tapscott?
Yes.
Ms. DeRoost?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
And Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion passes unanimous.
Thank you. So we will be moving that case to our next meeting on December 20th, 2021 for Timothy Williams. Next up, we have item C, investigative review files. Okay, so this is on the case number 21-110, Stephen Falstich. Attorney General Monahan, yes, Ms. Cisneros.
Sorry for interrupting, Madam Chair, if I can just briefly here. I just wanted to point out to the board that this case was previously considered by the board at its last meeting. The case stemmed from a complaint that we received from client HP, who in her complaint indicated that she had been seen by this massage therapist for over a year. Her allegations include inappropriate touching and that his behavior had become inappropriate more towards the end of their massage therapist and client relationship. At the board's last meeting, the motion was made to, give me just 1 second. I'm sorry, I'm pulling it up here. The motion was made for the board to move to proceed to formal interview in this matter based on the potential violations of law and factual allegations as outlined in the investigative report. And with that, I'll hand it over to Seamus. Thank you.
Madam Chair, board members, thank you. This is just a procedural issue. You're just going to be rescinding your motion to move to formal interview and then making a new motion. There was some documentation that was required to be in your packet that we slipped on and didn't provide you, and it undermined your motion a little. So we provided that document in here just to shore everything up. And your motion again would be to rescind. If you want to, it'd be to rescind your last motion and then move it forward to a formal interview based on the information you now have in the investigative report.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. That being said, I do move that the board rescind its prior motion to move this matter to a formal interview and remand back to investigative review to be held immediately for the purpose of clarifying and restating the board's motion.
Do we have a second?
This is Chair Moon, I'll second that motion.
And do we need can we do a voice vote or a roll call vote, Ms. Cisneros?
It could be a voice vote, but I believe to make it a clear record, a roll call would work just fine too. Mr. Tapscott?
Yes.
Ms. DeRoos?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
And Chair Ryder?
Aye.
That passes unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you. I move that the board forward the matter of Stephen Felsich in case number 21-110 to formal interview based on the potential violations of law and factual allegations presented in the board's investigative report. Do we have a second on that one?
This is Michael Tapscott. I second that.
Thank you. And once again, could we do a vote on that, Mrs. Nails?
Yes, Mr. Tapscott?
Yes.
Ms. DeRoos?
Aye.
Vice Chair Moon?
Aye.
And Chair Ryder?
Aye.
Thank you. The motion passes unanimous.
Thank you very much. We're just moving things right along here. I would like to take just a 5-minute comfort break, if that's okay, because next up we will be providing a presentation from some special guests regarding human trafficking. So could we please do a 5-minute comfort break so that our gentleman can prepare and we can all make sure that we're very attentive when they're presenting.
Madam Chair, would you like everyone back at 9:35?
Yes,
would that be okay?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Angela.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. We're going to take just a few minutes, let everybody get nice and comfy so that you have everyone's undivided attention. So we're taking a quick comfort break. Everybody will be back at 9:35.
Okay. Now, we've never used this platform. So how do we share our PowerPoint?
Tony, you are the... Tony, is that something that you can have help with?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
On the bottom of your screen, there is what looks like a tray or an up arrow. When you click that up arrow, then it says, what do you want to present? A tab, a window, or the whole screen that you're using. When you click that, then it brings up another window verifying which tab or which screen you want. By clicking on that, then you'll click OK.
Which one should we Which one's the best? Is it our window or? Because we're just pulling it. It's a PowerPoint.
Well, you're going to do window then and PowerPoint.
A window.
Yep. And there's going to be two choices for PowerPoint. The first one is the screen that you see with the things on the left that move up and down according to what you're presenting. And if you share that one, then do not try to share with a function 11, which does the whole screen, because it's not going to share that one. It's only sharing the one that's on the left side, I guess you'd say, that's got all those arrows. So I would just use the one that you have the normal arrows and just manually move it up and down.
Try that one. It looks like we only got
one. Yeah, we only have one option.
I guess that's one we're getting.
No, go ahead. Go ahead and you'll see.
Whoa.
Okay. You're showing us everything, not just that one tab. Yeah.
So I think if we maybe go back.
Yeah.
You want to stop sharing? Yep. You're still sharing. You want to stop sharing first. Okay. Now share a window.
A window?
So that's what we just tried. Let's try it. Maybe a tab or. Because we just did the.
Best for video. Okay. We could try our entire. Okay. It only gives us the one option when we do the. A window.
Okay. Then I don't think a tab's going to work for you because a tab is an internet page. So I don't think that's going
to
work.
Let's try the entire screen.
We'll just do the entire. You won't be able to see us, but you'll be able to see. We'll just pull up the PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah. Okay. It's got a choice screen that's asking you that's not popped on top. There you go.
Yep.
Perfect. That's what I need. Yay. Okay. Now, if you say from beginning, we will not see a dang thing. All we see is one page. Yep.
Oh.
So you can see where it says hiding in plain sight, correct?
Try changing the page to a different page. Go ahead.
Did it change?
Okay. It did change. Okay.
Okay. We can't see any of you.
You can. We're in a different window.
Okay. All right. So we'll just have to go off of sound, and if there's any questions, somebody will have to let us know. Or if we're going to do any questions afterwards.
We can definitely do that.
Yep. All right. Thank you so much.
We have about 3 more minutes. And then... I will introduce you.
And you can click the hide button on the bottom because that way we don't see your prompts.
Oh, okay. Hit the hide button. Cool.
Perfect. Can't tell that it's not my screen. Looks good.
For those of you that have just joined the call, the board is currently in recess. We have about a minute and a half to 2 minutes left, and then we'll reconvene shortly.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I printed it just so we can kind of go over into the line. I can hear anything to say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, welcome back. It is 9:35, and we are moving to the next item on our agenda. Right now, we have joining us a couple of wonderful gentlemen who have offered to enlighten not only massage therapists, but the public on the ongoing problem of human exploitation and trafficking. Gentlemen, I would like for you to introduce yourselves and give a brief summary of you, of what you do and what you provide. And Mrs., before we go, Mrs. Cisneros, you have your hand up.
I'm so sorry for interrupting, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clarify for the public that this is agenda item number 8. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, agenda item number 8. And presenting, we have Sergeant Mike Walter with the Phoenix Police Department, Human Exploitation and Trafficking Unit, and Mark Doty with the McCain Institute regarding human trafficking in Arizona. Gentlemen, I'll hand it over to you to go ahead and introduce yourselves and give a brief summary.
Yeah, good morning. Just as you said, my name is Mike Walter. I'm the new sergeant that took over one of the squads that Phoenix has two human trafficking squads. And I actually just took over for Mark Doty, who's sitting next to me. And
Hey, everybody. My name is Mark Doty. Mike just said, I retired in July. I held the position of a sergeant over one of the heat squads, like Mike indicated, for the last 7 years. And I was a former detective, a heat detective, a while back in the mid-90s, when it looked totally different than it does now. And now I just kind of assist throughout the state, kind of collaborating with other law enforcement to try to get what trafficking looks like in Arizona. Out there to the public as well as other agencies.
Thank you so much for being here. Now, I do want to mention to, and this in particular to the public members and licensed massage therapists that are on this call, that Mike and Mark have been provided a list of questions that were actually submitted. I collected them over the last few weeks from industry professionals regarding human trafficking, because there is a bit of a disconnect as far as, one, what the Arizona Massage Therapy Board can do and cannot do when it comes to trafficking, and also about really just kind of enlightening the public and bringing awareness. I really believe that many people are just completely unaware of how prevalent this is, not only in our industry, but that it exists everywhere. So we really appreciate you being here and providing this presentation. After your presentation, I would also like to invite the board members, if you have any additional questions that have not been answered, board members, you will be able to have an opportunity to ask those. As far as public members or public people on the call, most of the questions have been already submitted, so we also thank you for being here. Gentlemen, go ahead and take it away.
All right, thank you. And what we'll probably do is we'll probably go through the presentation and then just to kind of give a basis of what trafficking kind of is here in Arizona and what trafficking is in the industry. And then we have all the questions here in front of us, so we'll kind of go over those as much as we can too.
Thank you.
So we're just kind of, we'll be bouncing off of each other. I've got a lot of experience in the massage industry since I've been doing it for so long. And it hasn't really changed in the last 25 years since I've been doing it. Not a whole lot has changed at all. So what we first want to talk about is, what is an illicit massage business? An IMB is what's the common term for it. And why do we care about it? What is that connection to human trafficking that we see? And then we'll talk about investigations, how we kind of approach it, and then the prosecution. We're going to talk about why we focus on certain crimes over other crimes. So what is an illicit massage business? Now, one thing we want to make sure and is critical to us is, they're predominantly out there. There's legitimate registered businesses that operate on a daily basis within the guidelines of the regulations of the state, as well as criminal laws. So it's out there every day. What we also want to let you know is there are a ton of illicit massage businesses out there that present themselves as a legitimate business until you broach that door and you get inside and you get on the table. And then things change. Commonly, you don't find a massage business, a legitimate massage business, that is open at 2 a.m. in the morning in a strip mall with flashing neon signs on it. You don't see that. That's typically not a legitimate business. So we can go over some of those parameters as we go through this. Some of the helpful sites that we utilize. So the massage therapist search tool, it's great because it's on there. You can go to the website. You can click on it. You can put in a person's name to find out if they are a licensed massage therapist within the state of Arizona. So it's a great tool to use. Another thing that we use is a off-site, which is called RubMaps. So RubMaps is a site for the clientele of the illicit massage businesses to go and rate their provider and rate the location. So just like you would see on certain things, Penthouse Forum, everything else, where you're looking at all the porn sites and stuff, it's a site like that that allows the person to share their experience with that location and also with that provider. So, and you get those buyers that go out there and they will go to these sites. This is just one of the sites that will allow them to see, hey, I see that a lot of people have been going here and they've been getting some good results, some nice, what we call happy endings. And so they will frequent that site or that location.
It's basically a Yelp for the illicit massage business.
Absolutely.
And mind you, full disclosure, if you are monitoring this from work, I would not recommend clicking on that link because all types of flags will go off on your work's IT warnings.
Yeah, and it is a paid site, so just be aware of that too. All right, so massage part of trafficking, it's big business. All right, Polaris Project put out a page recently where it shows that there's more than 9,000 illicit massage businesses open in America right now, hiding in plain sight. That's why the title of this. They're in strip malls. They're dotting across highways. They're in commercial strips every day. And their revenue is what really gets it. So on average, the illicit massage business is bringing about $2.5 billion annually. So you can have one location. If you have a busy location that we've had here in Phoenix, a busy location typically is drawing about $600,000 to $700,000 a year. That's one location. So it's big business. So, and that's why they do it. So some of the key indicators that they're selling sex, they're using commercial sex for there, you might have their prices that are below market value because they're trying to get that buyer in there across the door because they know the true money comes from the act that's going to happen. So they don't have to charge a large amount for getting somebody in. The conversation between the customer and the masseuse where it starts going down that sexual end. A true masseuse typically is dressed in a lab coat or some kind of scrubs or something else. They're not in a women's lingerie teddy that exposes their breasts or their genital areas like we see in some of them. They speak very little English on a lot of these because predominantly what we see in the illicit massage business is their Asian run. That's what we've predominantly seen. Not to say that it doesn't occur with other demographic providers. Providers, yeah.
Providers.
I'm trying to think of a word, but but it happens across the board. But predominantly what we see is we see the Asian businesses. Also, you can't go into the business and just walk in and see everything. You've got locked doors. You have to be buzzed in. If you walk in and you want to say, hey, can you show me your facility? They're not going to let you back there. So you can't walk in and see one of the rooms and all that. So those are just some of the key things that we see. On legitimate businesses, you typically can go there month after month and see a provider that has been there, that's established, that has a clientele that they see on a regular basis. What we see in the Asian business that we have is they typically will rotate every two weeks to a month with their girls and get somebody new in there. You might have the owner that sticks around, or the what we call the madam of the house, or the I'm drawing a blank again. The Asian it'll come to me, but. The mama-san, I'm sorry. You might have the mama-san that is there on a regular basis. But the girls will typically change over.
When you walk into these businesses, you'll almost immediately know the difference. It's not your Massage Envy or any of your big chain massage therapy businesses. When you walk in, you can tell just whether it's the register setup or, like you said, the locked doors. It's definitely a different feeling. Mainly also with the clothing that the employees are wearing. They're typically pretty scantily clad. You would be shocked if you walked into Massage Envy and saw some of the things that they were wearing. So it should be pretty obvious.
All right. So kind of give you a background as far as the Asian business and stuff. So what we see typically is they're coming from China, South Korea, Thailand, Vietnam. They're under extreme financial pressure because what they've done is to obtain they obtain brokers to be able to go through the visa process to legitimately come to the United States. And oftentimes that broaches up to about $50,000. It's normally right around $30,000 up to about $50,000, what it costs them for these travel brokers to be able to obtain a visa to be able to come to the United States and work. And then they build from there because they come here with the belief that they are going to be working in a different industry or doing something else. And then they are held by fraudulent means by holding their passport or something else. And threats go back to the family because the brokers there are quite aware of their family tree. And they know where their parents live. They know what city they might be in. They know what financial means that they have. And they use that against them. So it's the coercion side of it. It's not force at that point as far as physical force. It's more of a coercion that they obtain their victims in this when it comes to human trafficking. So a lot of times you'll have their mothers, they're in their 30s to 50s that are working. It's not typically a young girl. It's typically that mid-range in age. And they have a little education. So when we're talking about human trafficking, if the person was underage, under 18, then it's automatically human trafficking when it comes to any kind of sexual with them. But that's not what we see. We don't see the underage girls in these parlors. They're adults. And so when it comes to an adult, when you have to meet the guidelines of human trafficking, then you have to have some kind of force, fraud, or coercion. So like we just talked about, the force, it's typically not there. You're not having that violence, that threat where they're getting beat or anything like that. The fraud, where they're using fraudulent means to get them to do what they want. You'll see that. You'll see the coercion where they'll use some kind of coercion for threats of deportation, threats of going after their family. So you'll see that. But what they definitely have is they have that guise of legitimacy. So when you're looking at the business and stuff, it just looks like it's a legitimate business from the outside. Until you get in and you start looking at the business from the inside and the operating procedures that they have, which is totally different. Those businesses are built to survive police raids. So they will hide ownership. They will move around. They'll change names. They hide money. So they're built to get around us. So what you also don't, what a lot of the public doesn't normally see is that standalone business typically is linked to several other businesses. So it could be nail salons, grocery stores, bingo halls, anything that dry cleaners, anything that has like a large cash flow going through it, because it's a good way to hide money. And so you might have a what appears to be a standalone, but that owner actually has five other parlors, a couple here in Arizona, some in California, some somewhere else. So that way they could also move their girls from store to from location to location. And there's a hierarchy. So it's a business not uncommon like the old traditional mafia, where they have a hierarchy going up. They have somebody running the parlors. They got somebody that's collecting cash. You got somebody that is moving money back to the homeland. You have somebody that is bringing the girls that are coming into the states, and then shipping the girls throughout the states wherever they're needed to be. So it's a large business. And predominantly what we typically see is we go after the money laundering, because it's a big business for that. It's a good business to hide it. So some of the ways that we go after it is if we have a known IMB. So, and that comes from us, because we routinely will go in the business to check compliance on it. And then we also check, like we said, those sites to give us indications that there might be something illegal going on. And when we do that, we would typically look at them for either operating and retaining a house of prostitution. That's where we target the ownership and as well as the employees. And I know that's a little hard to hear sometimes as far as the employees. But what we have to do is once we get in there, we have to find out in talking with those employees, are they do they want to be victims? And if they want to be victims, they are treated as victims and assist throughout the process. We try to get them help and any way that we can.
Unfortunately, with the culture that goes along with the Asian communities, they're very closed off to law enforcement. They don't work with us. They don't want assistance. Or if they do, they're not willing to say so, whether that's the coercion from what may happen to their family or just their lifestyle here. They are very walled off. They will not provide hardly any information, which makes it challenging to get the businesses shut down, because unfortunately we need some cooperation to prove some of these cases.
Yeah, and then if we're going to go after the legal enterprise of the money laundering, it targets the ownership as well as the employees as well. But it's a different strategy because we're looking at the financial means to be able to maybe stop that action in a more basis that hits them harder. But unfortunately, like if we're doing that type of investigation, it takes a while. It's very manpower intensive. And when we get the complaints coming in from the citizens or whatever, however means it is, you know, it could be if it's another business in the strip mall, like, hey, there's a lot of stuff going on here. Why aren't you guys shutting this down? Sometimes if we're going the legal enterprise money laundering, it takes a while to do that, and it can be frustrating to the complainants. unfortunately, that's where we have to sit down with them and explain what we're kind of doing. And then we also have covert sting operations. That's where it targets the buyers for soliciting sex. That's when we we'll talk about that in just a little bit. But so the known IMB, a lot of times what we do is we get a complaint from the outside. Like I said, it's the business that's adjacent to it that has all the – it's complaining about all these sexual noises that are coming through the walls because it's just a two by four construction with a drywall on it. You can hear what's going on across those walls. And then we get it from the human trafficking hotline. We get complaints that way. And then it's a customer that went in there for a legitimate massage and was asked about something that they were not expecting. So we'll get it that way. And then we have the proactive, which is us, you know, going and looking through rub maps, checking social media sites, just doing compliance checks at locations, surveillance, whatever it might be. So covert operations, this is a site or a location that I opened up back in 2017. So this was a sting operation. So we opened up as a legitimate massage business from the what appearance on the outside. But when you got inside and you look at our ads, you would understand that this was an illicit massage business. So this is where our detectives pose as masseuses and target the buyers that are coming in there. It's another way for us to go after those buyers and not just we have to do it a full circle. So because the buyers, if the buyers weren't buying, then you wouldn't have it out there. So it's supply and demand. So if the demand wasn't there, then the supply would dry up. But unfortunately, it's a big business. 10% of all trafficking occurs in massage businesses. Unbeknownst to most people, it's behind closed doors. People don't think about it. When you're driving down the road, you don't think that trafficking is going on behind that business right there. But it does.
It's actually, so like I said, I just took over from Mark a couple months ago and was able to be involved in the one that we had done this year. It was shocking to me how many guys were coming in, and we had definitely more guys expecting the outcome of an illicit massage business versus the one that we'd come in, because obviously our girls aren't licensed masseuses, but we'd end up kind of having to shoo off some of the guys that would show up, which there was very few of, that were looking for a legitimate massage.
Yeah, and understand, our detectives don't lay hands on these guys. So it's all of the actions of the guys that are coming in. And the actions are this. This is what you see when you walk into a illicit massage business and the buyer knows and expects what's happening. So all those masseuses out there, those licensed masseuses out there, what action would you take if you came in and saw a guy like this when you walk into the room? So because that's what we face when we run these sting operations. And quite frankly, the mannerism of the guys and what they expect when they come in there, I've had four detectives that have been groped by these guys because they expect they're paying their fee to come in there, and they are doing what they want when they get into the room because it's their understanding and their belief that, hey, I'm paying to be here. You're going to provide me what I want. And so that's the mindset of these guys, and that's why trafficking is so bad in here. But unfortunately, we don't get a lot of cooperation on the illicit massage businesses because of, like what Mike said, of the nature of their culture. So prosecution. What we do, it's difficult because we don't have witnesses. It's something that happens behind closed doors. There's no video of it or anything like that. It's difficult to prove. It's all circumstantial because you've got somebody when we get complaints of it, quite often it doesn't get to our unit because it's coming in as a complaint of a sexual assault a lot of times, because the masseuse might be assaulting the female customer. And that's what a lot of times we get the ones from the legitimate businesses. We have male masseuses that are doing things, or they're skirting some of the lines about what they can do, as far as, you know, having a female on the table and maybe rubbing her rubbing his genitals across her arm as she's laying there, or rubbing in an area that that they shouldn't be. That's what the complaints that we get from the legitimate side. From the illicit side, it's totally different. We get complaints of them going in there and saying that the masseuse grabbed their genitals, ripped the towel off, putting their hands or their fingers in areas that that shouldn't be. I don't want to get vulgar on this or anything, but those are what we get from the both sides of it. But it's tough because the trafficking really doesn't get to us, because a lot of times it is sexual assault that is coming in from the legitimate businesses. The illicit ones, totally different. And then it's difficult because the victim needs to come and testify. And so they have to go through that again. They have to relive that assault. And then on the illicit side, it's tough because, again, as Mike indicated, there's threats to the family. There's they know where they are. It's all that financial drain. And so they a lot of times do not want to continue with the process at that point, because they can just go and continue to make money. And then it just jury appeal. It's tough because a lot of the jury's like, well, I don't understand this and I don't see it. No, you don't see it because, again, it's behind closed doors. It's not like you're driving down the road and you might see somebody working as a prostitute on the street and see that it's in your neighborhood where you can see it. You don't see that at all. And so you don't think about it, but it's there.
One of the other issues that's also not listed in the presentation is that typically we end up running into repeat offenders. There's been the business owners that have been prosecuted for this in the past, and there's not huge sentences. So it's not like they're going to go away for 10, 12 years. And then come back out again. They're usually typically pretty light sentences, and they'll go back and give it another shot because they're making so much money. But now they've been through the legal process. They know what to look for and how to educate their employees to avoid law enforcement or to prevent the prosecution. So that makes it even more tough when we are asked to start investigating these illicit massage businesses that they basically stonewall us right from the get-go because they've been through it.
So, again, these are some of the prosecution charges that we do. We do the legal control money enterprise, money laundering. Pandering is a charge where we can go after them for trafficking that where it doesn't meet the guidelines of force, fraud, or coercion. So, and then the prostitution charges, that's tough because that's actually going after the masseuses on that, as well as the ownership, if we're doing a house of prostitution. And then we also do conspiracy for wrapping everybody up into it. So we utilize photo surveillance. We'll make contact with buyers that are going in there. We'll contact them and discuss with them, hey, what's going on? On when we're getting complaints of a business, we'll do that. So this is the one that we did in 2017 that I opened up. We had 86 men. We operated from for a 10-day period. We had customers anywhere from 22 to 78 in there, and we did 86 arrests in a matter of 10 days for guys that were soliciting sex while we were operating that business. So. And I couldn't keep up with the demand. I had to shut down the business every day, typically about 4 to 6 hours early, because I could not keep up with the demand. This is the latest one we did. This one was for, what did you do this, 5 days, Mike?
Yeah, it wasn't even a full week.
Yeah, it wasn't even a full week we did this one. So this is the one that we just did this past year. So And you can see it runs across the board, the background.
We had anything from lawyers to career criminals. Like, it's literally, you get the full gamut of offenders.
All right. We're going to just, we'll open it up to questions, as well as we'll go over some of the questions that were provided to us. So is there anything that anybody has prior to us going over the questions that were provided to us?
So I do want to mention, and this is, and maybe Mr. Tapscott has something to say about this too. I think part of what we experience as massage therapists is, you know, many of us are familiar with the history of massage therapy and how in the 1950s, the terminology being used to identify massage therapists had changed. And so one of the things that I would like to see the public also be made aware of, and also future massage therapists, is that the verbiage to you to identify a legitimate licensed massage therapist is in fact a licensed massage therapist over masseuse. Although in other countries, masseuse and masseur are used to identify whether a female or a male massage practitioner, it has become cringeworthy in the United States to be called a masseuse or a masseur, because it identifies that change of where the parlors were being opened and prostitution was being offered. So I think that, you know, that's a beginning of, you know, making sure that the public is aware, government officials are using the appropriate language to identify licensed practitioners as massage therapists versus masseuse and masseurs. Mr. Tapscott, I don't know if you have anything that you want to identify with that, because I know you're also in the industry.
Thank you. No, but along those lines, I am curious to ask you two gentlemen, do you have statistics on the percentage of people that are actually licensed when you go into these illicit establishments, when you've determined? I'm curious how many of these people are operating under a license.
Typically, massage, when we go into the massage businesses that we're investigating.
Yes, and where you've determined.
Rarely, if at all.
Gotcha.
Rarely, if at all.
Got you. So it's very unusual for them to be like, what about the establishments themselves? Are they often licensed?
Yeah, it's I don't know what the percentage is, but there is a good portion of them that are licensed businesses that might have one licensed masseuse, or I'm sorry, licensed practitioner inside. I'll get it, ma'am. We've done the same thing in the trafficking world. We have to change our terminology, and I totally respect that. So we will find that they might have one licensed practitioner inside that might have been licensed in California and then came over here and doesn't have to go through the whole process like what we have here, and makes it easier for them to get that license and then operate here in an illicit forum. But we've had both. The establishment, as well as, you might go into an unlicensed business and you might find a licensed practitioner in there, but predominantly they're not.
So just for clarification, and I realize these aren't exact numbers, but it sounds to me like I'm hearing you, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that 99% of the time the practitioner is not licensed under the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy.
That is correct.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Ms. Moon, you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mark and Mike. I enjoyed the presentation, and I know the work of Phoenix Heat as well as the McCain Institute, and I appreciate your commitment in the work. My perspective, as well as probably Mr. Roos's, a survivor perspective of advocating for those that have been victimized, since we are not licensed massage therapists. I do have a couple questions, and Michael took my first one. As far as, you know, I think as this board, we really need to trend down towards, you know, where our angle is of our duty of making sure that we're licensing people that are not doing this. And if we're trending towards majority is they are not licensed, then how can we really be in partnership with not only Phoenix, but law enforcement to combat and advocate? So I do want to, if we're landing in that there are some, I would love to hear more about the licensed businesses and if we're trending on anything that we should be aware of so we can make an assessment of what we should be looking at when we're giving license to people. My second question is, and I'm sending this out again in my mind of being a trauma-informed service provider, of the question of, or the comment of, do they want to be victims? I'm curious as far as where the state statute lands as far as what they are classified as. Is that an option or does the state law say that they are victims, and making sure that we are providing the most trauma-informed response to those victims? And then thirdly, international and domestic. I know I work a lot with domestic human trafficking, sex trafficking survivors, but again, drilling down on the numbers to make sure that when we're talking about these cases, are you talking majority international? Or are we also looking at numbers in Arizona where there it's also a domestic issue? That was a lot.
That was a lot.
Yeah.
So I guess my first question, as far as the victim, giving them a choice, is that a choice per Arizona state statute as whether they are or not?
I think I can jump on that one. Yeah. So basically, it's kind of across the board as far as our investigations go, whether it's a girl that's on the street that's being trafficked on the street or one of the women that's being trafficked in one of the parlors. What designates that is almost how cooperative they are with the investigators. We can't tell if they're a victim unless they tell us they're a victim. If we run into a girl on the street where one of my detectives gets a deal with her and we're able to arrest her, but then she tells us that, hey, this guy's been trafficking me for the last month or even a day, she immediately switches to being a victim instead of being prosecuted. And that's the same with the massage parlors. If the girls are able to tell us, and we try to look for the signs that maybe there is something else in play or somebody else is coercing them or forcing them into the business. And obviously we wouldn't be pursuing that. But a lot depends on the women that we're encountering.
And as you are aware, working with survivors, we work with survivors on the trafficking side on a regular basis. So it is tough because a lot of times our victims don't cross over to become true victims where they want to assist and everything else until their sixth, seventh contact with law enforcement. Unfortunately, a lot of damage has been done by then because now they've got a record. They've got a lot that they have to face afterwards. And a lot of it is because of the traffickers' coercion and force over them. And we understand that. We are definitely victim-centered and trauma-informed because we know just from the dealings with this for so long. And we try to go into it with that mindset. We did probably about 3 years ago, we tried to just do straight victim work for, I don't know, probably about 4 months, where we tried not to do any type of arrests. Unfortunately, what that did is it brought in, and we're talking about street prostitution, all right? So what that did was it skyrocketed the amount of traffickers that brought the women here to Phoenix to work, because we were making contact with the girls on the streets and they're telling us, yeah, you know, my pimp told me, you know, hey, we're coming to Arizona because they're not arresting anybody and we can work off the chain. We just work as much as we want. So it's tough in that. So we have to balance it in the law enforcement side. We have to balance what we can. What we found is we can't go full circle one way, full circle decriminalization or anything. because sometimes it gets us. We're still trying to figure that out. How do we work with our victims into changing that so we can assist them more? We have all kinds of platforms here to assist our victims. We've got housing, we got behavioral health, we've got
the city's actually paying for a victim advocate. We have a full-time victim advocate that's in our office with us, and she goes out on all of our operations with us. We've got all of our detectives have backpacks full of anything from clothes to toiletry items, feminine hygiene products. Just to kind of give you an idea, like it's at the forefront of our investigations of trying to identify the women that are victims, and we try to reach out to them. It's just unfortunately, like he was saying, if it goes full decriminalization, which I think would be the worst thing possible, because then it's going to run rampant. We have no teeth to, unfortunately, some of the best first step for some of these victims is getting caught by us, and then we can present them to some of the other victim advocates to get the counseling and get some of the extra assistance that they need.
And that's why we go so heavy on going after the traffickers, because that's ultimately where it lies, is we go after the traffickers, and we've gotten phenomenal sentencing here in Arizona. We have the prosecution here is great working with us. We've got the highest conviction rate of any trafficker in the United States through one of our cases. One trafficker got 493 years. So we hit them hard here, but we need the cooperation of the victims to assist us on that. It's tough without them, especially in the massage industry, because, like we said, it's behind closed doors. We don't know what's going on there. We can kind of, on the streets, we can kind of see what's going on, and we can be part of that. But behind closed doors, we don't know what's happening. So we need that assistance.
And part of identifying some of those, obviously working in the massage industry, I'm assuming it's like some of the other businesses that we run into contact with. You guys will start hearing just through word of mouth from other maybe customers that have showed up and like, oh my gosh, I showed up at this business and like they took my towel off and they're shocked. That is something that you guys can report to us and just get kind of the basic information or refer them over to us to make those complaints. And that will help us identify the legitimate businesses versus the illegitimate businesses.
Very good. Did that answer all of your questions, Ms. Moon?
I don't think so.
We're landing as far as
Arizona. What else was it, ma'am?
International versus domestic, where are we landing in Trinity and Arizona as far as the cases that you're seeing specific to massage parlors?
Trafficking, when we're talking in the trafficking sense, here in Arizona, it's I guess it's international practitioners, but they're licensed here in the States. So we don't call them Asian massage businesses anymore. It's an illicit massage business. So it depends on the activity of that business. So whether or not the provider inside, but where we see or where we know that the trafficking is occurring more is in the businesses that are Asian run, if that answers it.
That are domestic or that are internationally run?
Well,
they've got ties they've got ties back to their home countries, and a lot of the women are new to the United States from those countries. They speak very little English, and there's not a lot of trust for law enforcement there. But there is definitely ties that will you start pulling the string. Eventually, that string goes back to other countries.
Which in looking at the massage regulations and stuff, isn't there a portion of it where they actually have to be there and speak and understand the terminology and some of that? So I don't know how they're getting around some of that, unless they are licensed from another state and they can get around that here in this state because they were licensed somewhere else.
that's a whole other can of worms. I see Mr. Ogerton kind of chuckling back there. Yes, there are tests that when English is not their first language, there is a test they need to take in order to receive their license in the state of Arizona. And that, like I said, that's a whole other can of worms to be opened. And their reciprocity procedure for licensing in Arizona, that's why we're implementing a couple of new policy changes. We'll just kind of leave it at that.
Okay.
I do want to mention just real quick, I see, Desiree, I see your hand up, and I'm not ignoring you. But I do want the gentleman to go through the questions that have been provided, and because they may answer whatever question that you have. And then time permitting, if there's an opportunity, then we may be able to get to you. And that also is just a communication for anybody else who's on the call. So I see you, and I'm not ignoring you. But Mike and Mark, any of the board members have any other questions before the gentleman get to the list of questions that have been provided. Gentlemen, let's go ahead and get to that list of questions that I provided for you. And I think that may answer some questions that the public community and other people on the call might have.
Okay, so we got the questions. And so the first one is, what should you be aware of most about traffickers? If you're talking about the massage industry, is they are operating as the appearance of a legitimate business.
But again, we went over the signs, the signs that, and a lot of them aren't necessarily violent with the girls. So that's you're not going to, I don't have a lot of experience with them, but I haven't seen the girls that are beaten up like you do on the street to where they've got bruising and that type of thing. Like the traffickers, have other means of, we've talked about the families and the stuff back home. But they're not always obvious.
No, there's really no other way to, it's hard to tell what a trafficker looks like. Anybody that wants to make money off another human being can be a trafficker, and we see it across the board in our world. So, unfortunately, they look like normal people just like you and I. So it's when you look at the business and look at how they operate, that's where it changes.
Next question is, where are the hot spots? It's all over. We've seen them in Sun City. One of the last ones we investigated was actually out in Sun City, of all places, believe it or not. But I will say, the Phoenix Heat Unit has been one of probably one of the main agencies that have been focused on this type of trafficking. So we've noticed that some of these massage businesses have been pushed out to Mesa and Glendale and some of the outside cities. But that's not slamming them. It's just staffing short, and it's kind of a niche in law enforcement.
Yeah, and so unfortunately, you'll see a lot. Glendale has a whole lot of businesses, and so does Mesa. And it comes just from the heat unit here doing a lot of enforcement within the city. So who do you contact if you witness something? So you can contact the tip line.
Yeah, I don't know if I've got that on my
phone. I'll get the tip. So we do have a tip line. The heat does have a tip line that you can call, and it is monitored by a staff member here. And then the complaints are given to a detective, and the detective will then make contact with any of the complainants.
And I'll give everybody a second to get a pencil. And the Phoenix tip line is 602-454-2771. Again, 602-454-2771.
The next question is, what should the public look for with these businesses? And we've gone over some of that. But if you go, if you're going inside and you're not thinking about, you're driving up and you see it in a strip mall, and that's predominantly where we see the illicit massage businesses is in strip malls, and you happen to go inside and you pay to go in there, when
there's very low overhead, it would be another good sign. Like when you go into your massage envies and some of the, and I apologize, that's the only one I'm familiar with. That's why I keep saying that. But, when you go in, like you can tell, like they've penny pinched everywhere they could, whether it's like the cabinets inside or the real rickety cheap beds, or tables, excuse me, cheap tables. Just, it doesn't look like they've spent a lot of money. Like if you were starting a business, you would want to present it really well. You go into some of these businesses and they did the bare minimum to make it look legit.
Yeah, they build their tables out of wood and put a towel, a little piece of foam on it. You might see that. If they're offering a table shower, turn around and walk out. You do not want to go into that business because you're not going to like what's going to happen, unless you're going in there for a specific reason. So, but a table shower, if anybody is unaware of what that is, it's a room that they have designed. It's typically there's no legitimate reason in the massage industry to have a table shower. So it's a room that they've built, to be like a large shower. They have a table inside a room that has been tiled all out. It's got a drain in there. It's got a shower head over top of the bed, and they turn it on while you lay there naked and help you clean yourself. So I don't know of any licensed practitioner that does that for a therapeutic, any kind of therapeutic massage.
I know some of the high end spas do. They have what are called Vichy showers, but normally there's still obviously draping required. So there's disposable underwear offered. There might be a full body exfoliant or a mud application, and in those instances, that's when those types of showers would be appropriate. But the draping is probably the biggest piece of that.
Okay.
So now you know.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, we haven't run into that.
No draping at all.
Well, and these types, okay. Types of services you might find in like resort spas. So that's not something that you're going to see at a massage envy or an Element or anything like that, where I'm talking, the Princess or the Venetian, those higher end resorts, that's a service that might be offered at a resort spot.
Okay.
This is the next question is, can we change laws so that the person buying sex services get prosecuted more than the victims, the sex workers involved? Seems like the fault is placed on the trafficked victims and not those seeking the services. I would say that's probably a misconception, to some extent. Again, like we've talked about, we're very oriented towards it, providing the services. And if they express the fact that they are victims and they're willing to provide the information to us, about how they're being victimized, they don't get prosecuted at all, with us. And, as far as them getting more or less, there's not really a difference. They're about the same. They're both misdemeanor charges on some aspects of it, unless they're the traffickers. Now, on the other hand, if we can prove the human sex trafficking, they get hammered.
Yeah, the human trafficking is a class 2 felony. So you got murder and you got human trafficking, or sex trafficking. So it's right there. That's why if we can prove that, that's why we go after that. Otherwise, if we can prove the pandering for the person running the business and stuff, that's a class 5 felony. So you're looking in the felony range right there. But if it's between the practitioner and that that buyer, that's either a prostitution charge or a soliciting prostitution charge, and both of those are misdemeanors. So it's the same offense as far as level right there.
And we don't target one more than the other. We actually try to keep all of our operations on kind of a running loop, whether we're targeting the buyers or the girls, especially mainly speaking for the street, because that's where we end up dealing with most of our stuff. But we try to hit all of our operations a month just to keep everybody on their toes.
And that's why also in 2017, we brought on the sting operation to specifically target the buyers in this arena. So because predominantly we'd get the we do our searches and do our investigations into the known illicit massage businesses, but again we're going after the business, and a lot of times the masseuses or the licensed practitioners get I'll get it, Angela. They get caught up in it, but that's why we did the sting operation, because we specifically wanted to target the buyers and go after them and let them know you're not being forgotten. We're targeting you. So I think the next question we've gone over, because it's asking about signs of an establishment and that engages in it.
So the next one is what if any interagency communication and coordination is in place so the focus stays on nefarious actors so law-abiding practices are free to go about their business? It's frustrating because there's a guilty until proven innocent approach to massage. Is there any realistic expectation of decriminalizing sex work in an effort to devalue the black and gray markets? I'm going to jump right to that that last one where it's talking about decriminalizing. I think there's been a push here in the last several years speaking about decriminalizing it, and it's sex work. I think that is one of the worst things you could possibly do, because that will take, if they decriminalize it, that takes all of our teeth out of the traffickers, because now they're not traffickers, they're managers, because it's only trafficking because it's illegal. It will tie law enforcement's hands to the point that there'll be no way to help some of the trafficking victims. Like, it'll continue as normal as far as a devaluing it. My opinion, I think that would be one of the worst things you could possibly do.
And like we said, it's a tough approach. We're trying to find a how we can operate and provide services to our victims as much as possible. And that's ultimately what our goal is. What we really want to do also is we want to target those traffickers. And so if we can do that, that's what we do.
We work with so Phoenix has done really well prior to me getting here, thanks to Mark. We work with Tempe, Mesa, Chandler, and Scottsdale very consistently. And actually later this week, we've got a meeting to start preparations for Super Bowl and the Open and some of the other events that are large-scale events that are coming to Phoenix. There's quite a bit of coordination with the different groups. As far as the targeting, we've kind of gone over all of that versus a legitimate business versus the nefarious actors.
And then the one is human trafficking really based in massage, or does it exist independently? What other industries are affected? So it does happen independently. The location where we did our 2017 sting, we actually took off a business. The female in there was she was a Caucasian female that had her daughter working in there as well. She was a licensed esthetician, and she was operating the business and allowing or doing massage in there as well. the problem was that she was trafficking her daughter to coerce her into helping out with sex acts for that location. So it does occur. Well, typically what we'll see on independent ones like that is there might be some from familial trafficking that occurs within that. But when we're talking about the businesses, it's totally different. That's a whole hierarchy and everything on that. But it does, rarely, but it does happen.
On that same note, gentlemen, one of the things that I used to be in the salon industry, too. I'm a beauty school dropout, former nail technician as well. And one of the things that we used to comment, and I don't know if there's any legitimacy with this, but a lot of the nail salons with very, very little speaking English, are those nail salons, those foot spas that are offering these foot massages? And then in addition to that, they're like, oh, yeah, we do massage too. Are these also places that are susceptible or maybe even recognized as illegitimate businesses?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Angela, because reflexologies, we get complaints on them. Going in there for a foot or a leg massage and saying, hey, you know what, we've got a table in the back. Why don't we just go back there and I can give you a massage as well. Yeah, that does occur. We haven't, in the time that I've been doing it, I haven't had any nail salons, but nail salons typically would just be another business that they own to run money through. But the reflexology ones, they will do trafficking out of there as well. So at least in the massage portions of it.
Thank you.
Real quick, can we just confirm, this is Mariah Moon, that it is not all Thai foot massages that are having this issue?
No, absolutely not. There's a lot of legitimate businesses out there. It's very rarely that we get one out of the reflexology or something like that. And it's complaint driven, you know, where somebody went in for something and then they were offered something from one of the practitioners in there. So, but it's very rarely that we get it.
So how high a priority an issue is it for them, and how much time and personnel can they realistically devote to the issue? I've been told by law enforcement that it's a victimless crime and not a high priority. This was some years ago. Also, what kind of support will be available for those trafficked when these places are shut down? And would law enforcement be willing to collaborate with LMTs to find the places, since we are the ones that are usually most aware of them? We had mentioned earlier that most of the complaints you guys would probably run across the complaints probably faster than we do. So obviously we're willing to work, and why we provided the tip line. As far as the priority, obviously if we're getting the complaints, that's kind of how we determine what we're doing each day, is like the pile of work we do, and we've got a ton of it. So when we get the complaints, we try to prioritize which complaint seems the most valid and start there. And then unfortunately, we're falling victim to some of the staffing issues on the department. We just can't hire enough officers and detectives at this point, but we prioritize everything. And every complaint that we get, we definitely look into it. It just depends on how much information we get. Obviously, the more information, the better.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons that we wanted to be here today is we want that the collaboration between us and the board and all the practitioners out there. If you're hearing something, let us know, because that way we can target it and get rid of that, get rid of it out of your industry, because it's bringing it's highlighting the industry in ways that you shouldn't be highlighted. And that's what we want to stop. So, and we try to do that across the board on any kind of business, on the streets, in the escort business, in the licensed massage business. We want to help out in any way we can. It's tough that we down to 9 detectives. Mm-hmm. So we have 9 detectives for the city of Phoenix. And unfortunately, we help out all the other cities because we've been doing this for so long that they come to us because we're the leading experts in it. And so, like Mike indicated, they were recently just out in Sun City. We're in Mesa all the time. We're in Scottsdale. We're in Tempe. So we go and help out these other agencies because they haven't had the experience on how to go after these businesses and try to make it hurt for the ownership and go after them as a trafficking entity, not just go after the licensed practitioners or the unlicensed practitioners, I should say. So
This next question actually kind of follows along that same one, but I do have a little bit to add to it. It says, what steps can be taken to get local law enforcement and local chambers to take reporting seriously? I think there's a misconception that we don't take it seriously. I think what ends up happening is like somebody will call in and they'll report a complaint that they have, but they leave very, very little information. Mind you, there's millions of people in Phoenix and we have to prioritize. So if we get somebody that comes in and says, hey, there's a bad business here, but that's all the information we get, that's something that will probably have to go to the bottom of the stack. To help these complaints get followed up on faster, or to help us, what we would prefer is the more information, the better. So if you get a customer that comes in and says, hey, I went to this business and oh my gosh, like I said earlier, they pulled my towel off or they were shocked that it happened, start asking some more information. If they're not willing to actually make the complaint to us and you guys are going to take the step for us and provide the complaint to us, start taking notes, ask questions if they're willing to. And just be like, hey, I'd like to report it for you. What happened when you went in? Did they ask for money up front? Did you go into the back? When they went into the back, was there a locked door? Ask some of those probing questions that will help us go in there to act more like a normal customer would. And then that will also help with our investigation, and it will also help prioritize. The more information we get, the more obvious it is, and that's something that will jump to the top of our list.
Yeah, and have them, in following up with that, any minute thing, did they see boxes, a box of condoms out, did the towel that they were provided, was it only the size of a hand towel, or was it a full body towel? Were they asked to go under the sheet, or, you know...
Was there even a sheet?
Yeah, or... Would the licensed practitioner, or I want to say licensed practitioner, but what we see a lot of times is unlicensed practitioner. So the unlicensed practitioner, when we run across them, did she take offense that you stayed in your underwear, and she wouldn't give you a massage at that point? So just all the little minute details about what they see, their state of dress, how they acted, did they. Put up their phone and have a list of illicit acts that could be done. Stuff like that, where they're afraid to talk about it, but they'll show you on the phone what they because the language barrier.
And then the last one touches on the same thing, but it basically the last sentence kind of clarifies a little. In turn, people have given up reporting and just to complain about I'm just trying to cut off time, but it's not working. Basically, they're saying it feels like they've reported them, and now they're no longer reporting them because they didn't feel like anything's been done. Again, it just gets back to that information. The more information that we get and the more cooperation that we can get from the complainants, because a lot of them will want to be anonymous, and that makes it even more hard for us to follow up on. So I would just, as much information as you can provide. The last thing I would kind of help us just understand that some of these investigations we keep quiet. Like, we are out there working, but we keep these type of investigations quiet, and we don't necessarily want it all in the media because that makes our job even tougher. So there'll be very information that gets disseminated from our department. Some of the other agencies are more willing to. We try to keep ours on the down low because it ends up affecting how willing some of these people are able to be with us.
Because it's it's just like anything else. Once they learn all the tactics and everything else, they find workarounds. And so, and also just let the complainants know that sometimes these type of investigations can take a little while, because we want to, we don't want to just go in there and hit the location and shut it down, just to shut it down. We actually want to put them out of business so they're not going to traffic anybody else, as well as we want to have them not reopen just in another city. We don't want them to shut down in Phoenix and to just go open up in Glendale. That doesn't serve the purpose at all. So we really want to target them that way. And part of that is with the help with the board, and we have to try to find ways that we can work with each other to shut these businesses down so they do not get a license. And so some of the practitioners that maybe have a license will lose that license. Unfortunately, it's tough. I know it's tough for you guys, because just the mere fact that they've been convicted of prostitution doesn't necessarily mean that they can't have a license, as from what our understanding is. So I don't know what the board can do about that and what they can't do about it. But when we have a business that we do for a house of prostitution or an illegal enterprise, can the board then take a look at that and take away their license at that point?
Or not allow them to get it going.
And I think you had discussed it before you guys had jumped on, is that's one of the things that we voted on to update in our policy, is that if there is a felony charge in somebody's history, whether it's more than 2 years old, or because a lot of times there's that statute of limitation where it's like, if it's more than 2 years old, then they can get relicensed. And what we have updated and voted on in our policy is that a new fingerprint card and background check be provided for anybody who's renewing a license who has that in their history, and it will come before the board, and the board will vote on whether that individual should become relicensed or not.
And does that felony have to be sexually motivated? Because what we see is a lot of times in the other side of our human the human trafficking world is they'll plead to something else that when you look at the charge, it doesn't indicate anything to do with trafficking and stuff like that. But when you look at the case, it's a trafficking case, but it might get changed. So I don't want somebody to be done for illegal enterprise based off of the predicate offense is prostitution or house of prostitution or anything else. But the terminology, when you look at it, is just illegal enterprise.
Mr.
Looks like we got David with a question.
Yes.
We don't investigate based on the conviction or not the conviction. We investigate based on the behavior that led to the charge. So they don't need to be actually convicted of sex trafficking. If it involves a crime of moral turpitude, we're going to investigate it.
Perfect. Thanks, David.
Thank you. Mrs. Narrows.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to piggyback on that. The board does review whatever court documentation or whatever documentation related to the criminal record that is available at the time. The board will try their best. The board staff will try their best to obtain that information so the board can review that too. So it's not just looking at the final conviction or the final order. If there's documentation for what happened throughout the criminal case, the board, if it's available, the board will have it for review at the time that they look at the application as well. I just wanted to add that to the record. Thank you.
Thank you.
Angela, what is the best way then for Mike and his crew to, once they go through a case and a conviction is obtained, how can they provide you with the business and all the employees that might have been involved in that case that might have licenses to bring you aware of it and for you to then take a look at, should we at this point in time revoke their license?
I think that emailing the massage board directly would be a good start. Director Augerton, do you have a better answer for that? Because I think that with emailing the board, I know Mr. Augerton sees those emails as well and oftentimes can be forwarded to the board members if need be.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just, as a reminder, of course, the State Board has no authority over facilities. Facilities are managed by local municipalities around the state. So the only authority we have, but we would appreciate reports and direct it to the attention of Board Investigator David Elson, is on if the individual is an LMT, is a licensed massage therapist. But the board is a licensing entity and virtually has no authority over anything involving health complaints or facility complaints or the legality of a facility and so forth. Other states, you'll find that the regulatory board for the industry has a full spectrum of responsibilities. But in Arizona, it's really designed as a licensing entity, and it has no authority over education in terms of the curriculum or the schools and so forth.
Yes, Director, and that's what we go after the establishment in other means as well. We just wanted to make sure that if we do have a licensed employee, that we can give you their information to look at. We go after the business for by other means. So we get the other city entities involved at that point and try to get that business shut down for that location.
Absolutely. So that way, so now you know that if you are dealing with somebody who has a license for massage therapy by the state of Arizona, then that can go directly to Investigator David Elson. And then that will be brought before the board.
And they don't even have to be convicted. They, as long as the behavior, if they've been charged, you can call me and I'll start, or you can actually, there's a complaint form if you're sure they're licensed. You can just go on our website and fill out the complaint form, and then that'll initiate an investigation. But you don't have to wait to the conviction, it's the charge. Because we investigate based on the behavior, not the conviction.
That's perfect. Yeah, that's even better. Because we thought we had to have a conviction.
Ms. Moon, you have your hand up.
Yeah, I had a suggestion, and I know January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month. I wonder if we could, in some way, and probably ask staff to solidify kind of a protocol, or at least just give our information so that Merck and their team can have it, but maybe you guys can help us disseminate to other cities just to make sure that our services, how we're able to help, is willingly available, but to assure that law enforcement has the right information and understanding of how we can help and how we can't help could be a good goal that we could commit to possibly for the month of January.
Thank you for that. We can definitely discuss that in action items for future massage board agendas. Are there any more questions for Mr. Doty or Mr. Walter from the board members? And gentlemen, is there anything else that you would like to add before we end your presentation?
I would just say, like to say, you know, thank you for having us today. And it's good to see that we can start building a collaborative effort again. So because any way we can target trafficking, that's in our hearts. So that's what we want to do. So it's just it's another platform that we can target and eradicate the horrible crime.
Thank you. Ms. Moon, do you have your hand up once again? No.
It's an old hand, sorry.
The old hand. Very good. Thank you. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for being here and providing us with some education. We look forward to developing a relationship with you and seeing how we can yes, Mr. Elson.
Mark, I just emailed you my cell phone number and my work number is attached to the email also. So anytime you need to verify a license, you can just give me a call.
Thanks, David.
Thank you.
Now you've got the direct information.
and I'll forward you over mine off of Mark's email also.
Perfect. And gentlemen, just so you know, too, because this is recorded, so it will be available on our website for other licensed massage therapists to listen to at a future date. you have given a phone number for a tip line, you can probably expect that tip line to
blow up
a little bit. Yes. Hopefully. I mean, you know, we want people to be encouraged to speak up about what it is they're seeing in the communities. And you've provided a way for people to report. And that's been a big frustration for a lot of massage therapists, is, you know, the lack of being able to report and have people listen. And so we thank you for enlightening us and sharing your information with us.
Yes, ma'am.
It's a pleasure working with all you guys.
Thank you so much.
Is there anything you need to do? Oh. What's that? Something so, popped up on it. Was a
yes.
Madam Chair.
Yes,
Ms. May. Yes. My apologies for interrupting. I just wanted to advise everyone on the call today that the chat should not be utilized because this is an open public session. It would need to be stated for the record, rather than using the chat that's here in this forum. And I just wanted to make that clear. And then questions should be guided through the chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that clarification. We do need to move on to the next items. I believe I know who had sent that chat. So you can reach out to me directly and we can talk about that afterwards. Next.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Yes, thank you so much, gentlemen. One of the last things on our agenda for today, and possible action items for future massage board agendas. Ms. Moon, I want to kind of circle back on what you were saying before, about a possible action for a future, agenda item. Can you repeat that so that maybe the board staff can add that to our next agenda for December?
Yeah, agenda item requesting some way to collaborate or partner with, it sounds like Phoenix Vice or Heat would be great to work with for Human Trafficking Awareness Month in January, and kind of requesting staff to look at different opportunities that we could collaborate with them.
And I'd also like to see if we can add something to the future board agenda meeting. And this might be super easy. This will be more directed towards Director Overton. I would love to get that tip line phone number added to the website. I think that would be incredibly beneficial for a licensed massage therapist to have an actual phone number to report in the event that they're witnessing something that is questionable as far as illegitimate business practices.
Madam Chair, I agree. I was having the same thought. And, you know, we added some things when we had Vice Chair Lucchese here on the website, and we can embellish that with this number.
Thank you. Mrs. Neros?
Yes, my apologies. I keep forgetting to use the hand-raising function here. I just wanted to say that I don't think that the board would need to place that on a future agenda as an action item. I think that fits under agenda item number 8 as just some board direction at the end of that presentation. Would that be fair, Seamus?
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, Attorney General.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So just to clarify for the board, we won't need to agendize that for the future. That's something that the chair can direct the staff to do at this time. Thank you. Well,
I am absolutely direct. Thank you. Ms. Moon, you have your hand up.
Yeah, real quick, can we also ask, and again, I want to be really cautious and aware of these topics are very sensitive and triggering, so that when we are talking or having presenters, whether it's pictures or just explaining some of these horrific acts, that we're giving people full disclosure of trigger warnings that they may not want to engage in seeing the agenda item and remove themselves from the conversation. I think we have a lot of public members that including myself, that would just want to know or be aware of anything graphic that is going to be discussed or presented on.
I believe that that would be a reasonable request. Even when we're talking about cases, that, you know, there's like a warning. warning label on it. Okay. Are there any other mentions, discussions, anything from the board members that we need to address? Yes, Mr. Tapscott.
I'd just like to request a future agenda item for the new year, because unfortunately I'm not here for our next meeting in December. But in light of some of the things that were shared today, I would like to request that we discuss the communication proficiency, which is section 32-4222 part E.
Anything specific to that reference?
Yeah, specifically, I mean, we refer to it as the English requirement, but it actually states that it's a communication proficiency. I'm not arguing the law. I'm arguing the application of the law. I'm not sure that it's set at the right limits, that it's providing the right protection for the public, and I think that actually it could be keeping people from contributing to the tax basis of our great state. And in light of the fact that we just heard that less than 1% of applicants are performing illegal activities under a license, and we've also been told that this communication proficiency has been utilized to help prevent that, which I don't think is necessarily its original intent. I think it definitely needs to be discussed. Definitely also the level it's set at a college level requirement. And I think that affects many people in our state.
Thank you for that.
But respectfully, I request that we discuss it in the new year.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Board staff, did you get all that? Are there any other questions? Any other opportunities for discussion from board members? From board staff. All right. It is Monday, December 6th, at 11:02, and this meeting is now adjourned.